Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
So we're back in the hallowed halls of
Mark Halleck's hallowed halls. Mark Halleck's basement.
We're in his office.
It's really a closet.
And his office is covered floor to ceiling on the walls with, are you ready for this? Old vintage tennis rackets.
Yeah. Well, that's one wall.
That's true.
The other wall has the vintage touchdown Jesus.
Yeah.
But I didn't know you were a tennis player.
I am.
Wow.
I am. I love tennis. Tennis and basketball were my big sports growing up.
This is Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton.
He doesn't believe me.
And
I was in church softball league.
Oh, did you? I got kicked out.
Did you? Yeah. The only athletic compliment I ever got in my whole life was good eye.
Wait for it. Oh, you did.
Good eye, Clifton. Good eye.
You really saw that one.
Welcome to our podcast today. I'm Dan Hurst. There's Mark Halleck sitting over there and Mark Clifton sitting right there. And what are we talking about?
We're talking
today?
About toxic pastors.
Oh, boy.
So I know most, that's a good number of you listening right now. Thing is, you don't know you're toxic, right?
Is that one of the signs?
That's one of the signs, not knowing. No, we're talking about toxic leadership styles. And look, all of us are fallen. All of us are sinful. All of us are mortal. All of us are given to pride. All of us love the praise of men. So all of us are susceptible to some of these toxic traits. Yeah. And we laugh about them, but they can devastate churches. They can devastate people. And so this came from an article in biblicalleadership.com. We're going to look at 10 traits of toxic leaders. And so, I mean, you need to do some serious self-exaggeration. I do that all the time.
That's part of it. That's one of those.
That's one of the toxic traits. That was a Freudian slip.
There was.
My wife thinks I do self-exaggeration all the time. You have to do self-examination.
There it is.
I found it.
Okay, here's number one.
Okay,
you ready?
Here's number one.
They are works-filled versus grace-filled.
Yeah,
in other words,
go ahead.
Rules, policy, and the law trump people.
Which means if somebody makes a mistake and they're a volunteer or a staff member, and you don't give them any grace. Talk about that, Mr. Halleck.
Oh, man. I got so many thoughts on this. I mean, here's the bottom line, guys. Especially when you're going to a declining church, and you've heard us say this. You've got to be the encourager of encouragers.
You've got
to help people. You need to create a culture. I often say this. Churches typically have either a fear culture or a grace culture. And I think going along with this, a works-filled or grace-filled culture. If you want people in the game using their gifts, then you have to create a culture where it's okay to fail. You know what? We fail, and we're going to just get up. We're going to try something else. Otherwise, what you're going to do is build fear into people. And they're not gonna try ministry ideas. They're not gonna feel loved. And so, man, we've got to encourage big time our folks. That's the grace of the gospel, man. Here's what I would say. When I see leaders that are more works filled than grace filled, I see a guy who's not living in the freedom and joy of his salvation. Because listen, we are to forgive as Christ has forgiven us. Mm-hmm. We are to encourage in the way that the gospel has encouraged us. And so I would say this is hugely important. And if you are this kind of leader, I would say, or you see signs of this, I would encourage you, brother, to really spend some time humbling yourself before the Lord and repenting of ways that you haven't been grace-filled. Because true Christian leaders are grace-filled leaders.
Exactly. And you have a staff person who doesn't complete a task on time, doesn't follow through like they should. Obviously, you have to instruct and encourage and help them do it correctly. But man, you don't want to quench their appetite for ministry. You don't want to wound them so deeply that they're afraid to try anything.
Totally.
And I'll tell you, having been 45 years in ministry, I hear stories all the time from both full-time, part-time, and volunteer staff that just they live in terror of their senior pastor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
Because he has no grace.
Yep.
If you don't get this done, if you're not here when you know. And again, there is that balance, but let's just be understanding that, man, we ought to be a place, like you say, where grace abounds.
I have this idea that, especially with staff members in the past, that failure is incomplete success. And so really all you're doing, if you fail, all you're doing is you've got to find the next step to get to success. So failure isn't the end.
Yeah.
Failure is the process of getting to whatever it is that you need to do.
Well, Jill and I were out at San Diego not long ago, and we were on the deck of the aircraft carrier. I think it's the Enterprise. I'm sure it is. And we were taking a tour, and there was a guy there who was on the Enterprise during the Vietnam War. And he said they could look at the respiration and heart rate and stuff of the bomber pilots or whatever. And when they were making their bomb runs over North Vietnam or wherever, they were at a certain respiration rate and all. But he said when they were landing on that carrier at night, it was even higher. Hmm. In other words, their anxiety was higher landing on a carrier at night than doing the bomb runs. And he said his job was to help direct them to that carrier, right? He was the guy. And he said, so I would say things like, you're looking really good, coming in really well. Mm-hmm. Your speed is, okay, maybe just a tad slower. Oh, mm-hmm. Looks perfect. And hey, great. Hey, maybe just a little more to the right. Looks great. He said, I had to guide them in with the most positive, optimistic direction I could because they were already at an anxiety-filled
level. Scared to death,
And if I said, hey, slow down, you idiot, or hey, you're going too far to the right.
Yeah.
He said, I think that's how we have to deal with many times people in our church.
Man, that's
the
good.
Staff that are with us, you know, encourage them all the way, but yet give them gentle instruction.
That's right, that's right.
Hey, man, just a little more this way.
Yep.
A little more. And yet, most of the time, unfortunately, because pastors are stressed and everything else, sometimes you can be the hardest guy to work for. Don't be that guy.
Yep, and I would. That's so good, man. Here's the deal. I often say this. You want to be the kind of leader people in the church want to follow. Don't just have to follow.
Mm. Wow, that's good.
Okay, that they want to follow. And the way that you build a culture where people want to follow your leadership is if you're a grace-filled leader. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. And the fact is, if they don't want to follow, they won't.
Well, that's true.
You'll end up looking for another church. And you should hear that podcast that we talked about last time, because you'll be making a transition before it's over with.
That's true. Number two, they are all about their reputation. In other words, toxic leaders are more concerned about the reputation that they have or the reputation of the church than they are even about the individual staff or church member that they're dealing with.
Mm.
And boy, I'll tell you what, church members know. You know, they know when they're being used. Staff members know when they're being used to sort of glorify the pastor, make him look better.
Totally. Oh, yeah. Are we building his platform?
Building his platform.
Yep. That's exactly
Man,
right.
I hear that all the time. And also, what's the reputation of, not the reputation of Christ or the kingdom, but of our church and of my ministry. And that trumps everything else. It's more important than anything else. And so in that sense, if you sense that pastor cares more about his reputation than he cares about your growth as a member or a leader or a volunteer, that's a toxic sign.
That's right.
Which goes along with number three, which is?
They use people.
Yeah.
In other words, outcomes are more important than people.
Right.
And I think we've probably all seen this before. I mean, if there's one thing you do not want to feel. If you could, even as you're listening to this, have you ever served in a ministry or even a job where you just felt used, you know?
Sure.
It's the worst. It's the worst. And sadly, in the church, so often, I think a lot of people feel that. I mean, I know even in our own ministry, I've talked with many people. Honestly, I don't need to name names, but we've had a church recently around here with a toxic leader at the top, and it was a large church. And we're starting to see wounded sheep kind of come through our doors. And one of the things I'm hearing over and over again is, man, I just felt so used by that guy.
And what it looks like, people, leaders who use people, unfortunately, Satan blinds us, and we don't even know we're doing that.
Well, that's true.
We think the end justifies the means. So if the end is we're going to grow the church, we're going to reach people, but if I have to use people in the process,
then so be it.
You don't. That's not the case.
Yeah.
And your ministry are the people that you're working
with. Amen.
The people that are there right now at this very moment.
Yeah.
And you know, there's an old Home Mission Board president years ago. I wasn't around. This before me. His name was Quartz Redford. And he always had on his desk this sign that said, "People count." Hmm. I remember seeing a picture of that, you know, and I'm back in the 80s when I worked in the Home Mission Board, I asked somebody about that. I said, you know, Quartz Redford on his desk, there was that sign that said, "People count." I guess, anything unique about that? They said, yeah, Quartz Redford had a real problem in that most of the time in Baptist churches, all we do is count people.
Mm.
And he said that was to remind him that we don't count people. Mm. People count. Mm. And I've never forgotten
that's
that.
That's cool. That's that really cool? good.
Yeah. That is good. You ought to put that on your desk.
People count.
People count rather people than count
it's
people.
It's true. It's true. Number four, they surround themselves with yes people.
How many times have we heard about large, successful, dynamic, especially young pastors who grow churches, surround themselves with yes people, and then get into all kinds of trouble?
Yeah, there's no accountability.
And what it means is if you don't agree with me, you can't be a leader.
Yeah.
If you don't agree with...
Well, right.
Right.
You'll get kicked out of the inner circle.
Yeah. And if the church is a growing church, there'll be people standing in line to take their place.
Totally.
That's what happens.
Man, that's so true.
All kinds of guys that want to be in your orbit.
Yep.
And so they'll say yes.
Yep.
And if you get a sense, you know, when I was at... Now, don't misunderstand what we're saying. I'm not saying you want men around you who are always conflicting with you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
just
want,
critical
you
all
want
the time.
Spiritual chemistry.
Yeah.
But when I was at Warnell and, you know, I had this group of wonderful elders around me, they reminded me that, Clifton, you wake up in a new world every day.
Mm-hmm.
And not every idea you wake up with is one we need to do.
That's right.
And so they were very kind at times of saying, you know, Clifton, I don't think that's something we have the bandwidth to do right now. And I needed to hear that.
Yes.
Okay?
That's right.
I didn't need people around me who agree with every crazy idea I came up
totally.
With. I need some people to help me process those ideas.
Yep.
And that's what we're talking
that's,
about.
I'm the same way, man. I'm the same way. I need it. And you need people. Listen to this. You need people. And secure leaders get this. Insecure leaders only surround themselves with yes men, yes people.
Right.
But secure leaders know I need pushback. I want pushback from people that I know are for what we're doing. I'm not saying get Captain Critical in there who's just mad about everything. But you need people who can push in. You need to be self-aware and humble enough to go, man, I don't have it all figured out. And that's one of the ways, Clifton, you and I are alike. We got ideas left and right. We need people to say, slow down there, pal.
Right. And you know, one of my young elders, Danny, he said to me one time, you know, Clifton, I think sometimes you show up at meetings and you're not really prepared. He said, the unfortunate thing is you can get prepared in a minute and pull the meeting off okay. But he said, I can still say you're really not prepared.
Right.
I mean, that's the kind of input
totally.
We need,
that's
right?
That's helpful. Yep.
I fired him, by the way.
That's right.
And I got somebody who said I was always prepared, so it worked out really well. No, I think you need... I do think you need people who... And one of the things that I've done in my ministry is I wanted guys I trust to autopsy my sermons.
Yeah.
Tell me, how did that go today?
Yeah.
What did I say something? And I've had them say, you know, you spent too much time telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of got off track.
Yep, yep.
You gotta receive that.
That's good, man. That's really good.
Okay, what's the next
one? Okay, well, the next one kind of goes with, I don't know if we need to say a lot more, but pushback or disagreement are highly frowned upon. So, in other words, constructive criticism is not received well from anyone.
Oh, yeah.
And so we've just talked about that.
Yeah, I know. But I hear from staff members and church leaders say all the time, I can't tell my pastor anything.
Yeah, I can't give him any feedback.
I can't give him any feedback. He won't receive it.
Totally. And this leads to number six. Bottom line, they are full of pride.
Yeah.
It's pride, man. That's what undergirds all of this.
That's what I said when we began. We all love the praise of men.
We do. Yep.
And man, pride is so deceptive. You don't even think it's pride.
Yeah.
But it certainly is. And listen, God detests the pride, but he runs toward the humble.
Amen.
For sure.
He opposes the
number
pride.
Number seven.
They don't lead well through change. Now, that's interesting. There isn't a consideration of the ongoing well-being or health of the staff and perhaps others in the church.
No, so what change means is because the pastor woke up today and decided we need to do this, everybody's just got to get on board.
Get on board, yep.
Yeah.
Or get out.
Get on board or get out. Yeah. Get on, you know, get on the bus or get out. And as one pastor famously said, we'll run over you.
We'll run over you. Right, right.
And as though that's something to be prideful about.
Yeah. And we've known all kinds of, and I hope you're not one of these, people who go in one direction and 2 months later, now they've decided they're going to go in a different
Boy,
direction.
Boy, that's true. That is so true.
This is the way we're going to do things. Yeah. We changed the way we're going to do things. And you're just running in circles when you do that.
That's right. This is not your church, Pastor. This is the Lord's church. And so just because you get an idea, this is also why a plurality of leaders is so important, to have other voices. But am I serving the congregation? Am I recognizing, and some folks take more time to get on board, and I'm going to do what it takes to take the time to make sure we're unified moving forward.
And Jeff Orge, who was president of Golden Gate and Gateway Seminary for so many years and now the new executive treasurer of Southern Baptist Convention, president of the executive committee, but he said something really impactful one time and wrote a book about it, actually. But it's one thing to get people to agree to change. That's an easier step than to help lead them through the change.
Boy, that's true.
And so many times, pastors, we think when we get them to, you know, the vote was, you know, 78 yes and 23 no. So, okay, we're going to change. No, that's the vote to start the change.
Mm-hmm.
That's easier to get than to lead them through the actual change.
Yeah, boy,
and so you've got to be patient and understanding, tactical, patient, all of that. And leading them through change. So I would direct you to Jeff Org. We'll put the book in the show notes.
Do you remember the name of that?
I don't off the top of my head. Thank you.
So good, though.
It was good. So good that I can't
remember. So good you can't remember. But it was great.
Hey, here's a point that's a very sensitive point for me, because I have worked with pastors like this. The leadership is autocratic. It's like, I am the boss. You know,
what's that been like, Dan, for you, is you've worked with pastors?
Brutal.
Like, yeah.
Brutal. There's no other way to say it, because what happens is, when you're dealing with an autocratic boss or an autocratic pastor, you're dealing with somebody who is going to cover his backside no matter what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And if he has to get rid of you to do it, he will.
He'll do it, yeah.
And that's just because the boss has to survive. You know, it's that attitude that I know what's best and I know how to get it done, and you're in the way. And so that means that you have to go. You know, I once heard a guy say that when you're working with a group of, and in fact, he was a pastor, and he would talk about his staff, and he said, you know, if I don't understand the way all of my staff members think, then I'm not seeing the big picture because I'm not seeing it from their perspective. And an autocratic leader doesn't look at things from anybody else's perspective.
They're not really concerned about that.
Don't care.
Yeah, don't care.
Yeah.
It's good.
So let's talk about this narcissistic thing, where somebody becomes so self-absorbed that it's like, you know, I noticed this thing that you don't even have a mirror in your office, Mark.
It's not. Hey, I'm not a pretty guy to look at. Nobody wants to see this much.
But it is a symptom of somebody who isn't self-absorbed, in my opinion. So, do you have a mirror in your office?
Do I have a mirror in my office? No. Are you kidding me? Actually, I do. They have these new mirrors now that actually slim you down.
Oh, you got one of those?
One of those. It looks really good.
It's an encouragement mirror.
It's an encouragement mirror. No, I don't have a mirror in my office. But I am given to self-absorption.
Well,
I really am. Yeah. I am. I'm telling you, I am. And
well, wait a minute now. If you say that and
then you can't be.
Well, I'm looking at this that says that they rarely see themselves as the source of any problem.
Well, that's not true. I'm always the source of the problem.
No, that's not true.
No, self-absorbed, narcissistic. It is, as pastors, is one of the things we struggle with the most. And you know, I Martha was self-absorbed and didn't see herself as the source of the problem, and yet she was the source of the problem, right? And as pastors, it's so easy for us to see all the other issues in the church. For example, all right, so Richard Blackaby, my dear, dear friend, shared this story with me recently, and it's a good one. A pastor came up to him and said, you know, Richard was talking about volunteers in the church. He said, well, I can't get any volunteers in my church at all. Can't get any. Can't get anybody to serve in the nursery. Can't get anybody to go on visitation. Can't get anybody to do anything. I've been there for 10 years. It's just the most frustrating place. It's just nobody will do anything. I just can't develop any leaders. Can't develop any volunteers. And Richard said, well, how long have you been there? And he said, been there 10 years. He said, well, that's all on you. Richard said, your job is to develop volunteers, and you can't offer that to somebody else. He said, the good news is that is a skill set that can be learned, but you have to learn how to do it,
right.
And you have to understand that it's your problem, not their problem, for not volunteering. Okay?
Dude, that's good.
So, I mean, there's a sense in which it's easy for a pastor to think it's always somebody else's problem, but it really is my problem, and the issue is me.
I've got to own that.
I got to own
that's
that.
Right. That's right.
Which brings really us to the last point that we want to make, and that is that the way the Holy Spirit acts? You know? I mean, seriously, when you look at the things that you do with your people, the things you say to your people, the way that you treat your people, is that the way somebody who is Spirit-filled acts?
Look at your pastor and say, and pastor, in yourself, ask your wife to look at you, because that's the one that really knows you. Am I displaying the fruits of the Spirit on a regular, consistent basis? Or am I displaying short-temperedness, anger, frustration, bitterness, contention? Those are not fruits of the Spirit.
That's right.
And if that's what's coming out in us, that's toxic. It'll lead to these other nine things we talked about. At the end of the day, if you lead with the fruits of the Spirit, you won't have these other nine things. But that does not happen naturally. We don't drift toward holiness,
no,
even as pastors.
Right.
So daily we have to beat our body in submission, at least we're not worthy of the gospel we preach.
That's right.
Daily we got to be aware that we are still fallen and very susceptible to pride, to ambition, to all of those things. And at the end of the day, Satan makes us think we're doing it all for the right reasons. If we're being hard on our staff, it's because they need it. If we're using people, it's because, well, the goal is out there is more important than these people. All of that stuff. We always rationalize our poor leadership.
Yep.
So take a look at these things. And look, I'll admit I've got some of them.
Sure.
And,
oh, yeah. We
Alec,
all can.
Alec, you've got a bunch of them.
Totally.
No.
I'm marking every one of these guys.
We all have them. So we have to fight them and battle them.
That's
because
right.
They don't lead anywhere that's good.
No, they don't. Let me say this too. As you're talking, remember what Jesus says in John 15? And actually, this is a Blackaby that I've been thinking about from a few months ago. Jesus says, I am the vine, you are the branches.
Yep.
If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit.
There you go.
But apart from me, you can do nothing.
Right.
Abiding in Jesus is our number one duty and joy in the Christian life, so that we might be the kinds of leaders and pastors that are not known for toxicity, but those around us would say, you know what? He is a loving leader.
There you go.
He's patient. He's kind. He's gentle. And only the Spirit of God can do this. But so I would say this, at the end of the day, as we fight sin, are you abiding in Jesus, brother? Because that is the answer to this, to put these things to death. Is for Jesus to bear good fruit in and through you by his Spirit.
That's it, because you cannot produce the fruit. You only can bear the
fruit.
That's
right. That's right.
Well, that wraps it up for today's episode of Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. Thank you so much for spending time with us. And we want to say, we haven't done this, but we do want to encourage you that if you listen and there's a button where you can subscribe, please do.
Please.
Because we don't get any money for that. We wish we did, but we don't. But it helps us to know who's listening, not so much who's listening, but the demographics of who's listening, that sort of thing. And it also lets the North American Mission Board, who makes this possible, know that that we're absolutely touching some people's lives and making a difference. And we are grateful
for
that opportunity.
And it downloads automatically to you.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about, hey, should I listen to Revitalize and Replant? If you subscribe, it's going to be on your device, and you can listen.
It'll show up.
It'll just show up. It'll just show up right at you. It'll be like a miracle of miracles. It'll just show up right there. Subscribe. And he's wrong. We are prideful men, and we do want to have more. We're trying to get more subscribers than Ed Stetzer. So if you can help us beat Ed Stetzer, then hit that subscribe button. Thank you much.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.